Daddy, what are you doing?
We're recording a podcast.
Who's listening?
Islander fans are listening.
Where are they?
Well, they're right here.
Welcome to the Isles Faithful Podcast with your host, Michael Sherline.
Good afternoon. And welcome back to the Isles Faithful Podcast. I'm your host, Mike Sherline. This is episode 7. Today's Thursday, September 27th, and we are going to bring you a couple of things we recorded last week. Unfortunately, I've had some things happen over the last couple of days that have prevented me from getting you to the content that, you know, we had recorded previously. So we're going to catch back up. And I hope to have a couple podcasts in a row here this week just to catch things back up with training camp and what we've done. This week's episode, or today's episode, I should say, we are going to catch up with Jim Baumbach of Newsday. We talk about Belmont. We talk about Coliseum. We talk about the Lighthouse Project, the MTA, some projects around New York State that could have implications on Belmont, and the coalitions against Belmont, for Belmont, things of that nature. So it's worth a listen. I wanted to keep all the Belmont stuff in one episode in case it doesn't interest you. You could just skip the whole thing instead of suffering through 37 minutes of us talking about arena stuff. So give it a listen. Let me know what you think. All right. So welcome back to the Isles Faithful Podcast. This is episode 7. And joining me this episode is Jim Baumbach of Newsday. Jim, how's it going?
Doing good. Thanks for having me.
All right. So a little brief history between Jim and I. Just like everybody else that I've had on the show, I go back a couple of years with. And I met Jim when I was part of the Islanders blog box back in like 06, 07. And Jim was actually sent, believe it or not, if you remember this, to cover us in the blog box on the trade deadline. And you basically hung around with us, you poor guy, all day with a bunch of salty bloggers.
You know what, that was, if you remember, that was part of my, I wouldn't say apology tour, but it was kind of like a make good tour. Like I felt like I really had angered Islander fans. I don't know if you remember this. This was, if you want to call it based on Lighthouse years, this was pre-Lighthouse. So this was, I left the Yankee beat in 06 and I was doing web columns, you know, what they call web columns back then is now a column, you know, these days, but it was basically opinion pieces. And I wrote a column about Al Arbor coming back. And I guess it must've been 07 then, because wasn't that in 07 when Al Arbor came back for that game?
I'm pretty sure it was in 07. It was Ted Nolan's thing. He got tired of looking at, you know, the 1499 and wanted to get him up to 1500. So I think that was in 07.
Yeah, so I did like what I intended to be a real tongue-in-cheek column on the fact that it was, you know, basically a charade, and which is perfectly fine. Like, there's nothing wrong with bringing him back and having him behind the bench and stuff like that. I just kind of poked fun at the fact that he was actually getting credit for the victory, and that he was, you know, the season would look at like Ted Nolan 42-28-7 or whatever, and Al Arbor 1-0, which for whatever reason, last week I was Googling around and I landed on it, and it does actually say that. But anyway, I did long story long, I did a column, poking fun at it. I could not believe the outcry I got from Islander fans. This was before I really knew Islander fans, and the intensity and the care for that they have for their team, which is obviously a good thing. And after that, I guess that had been like 2 months later because it was trade deadline. I remember thinking like, what's something way I can, do something that's inoffensive, you know, to the Islander fans. So I went and spent the day with you guys, and there was, and I still keep in touch with, yourself, Tom, I think he was in the box that day, right?
Yep, Tom, Ken Dick.
Okay, sure. Yeah, I remember just like live blogging it, you know, more or less.
Yeah, you were live blogging. That was the whole joke of the day, was you were live blogging us live blogging.
Right.
And I think you even shot some video for Newsday.com as well that day.
You know what? My memory is sitting in the empty Coliseum. You can enter your own joke there on empty Coliseum. But I remember being in the empty Coliseum, and I remember just we were like in the stands, basically. And I remember seeing like a Penguin player running up and down doing the stairs or whatever. They must have been playing the Penguins that night. Did they make any trades? I don't even remember if they made any trades that day.
I don't remember exactly who was involved, but it was somebody that was rooming on the road that day with Crosby. I can't think of the player that was involved.
The player with the brother, because I remember I called him by the wrong name, and I remember being ripped on the, you know, I guess this was pre-Twitter, but I remember people ripping me. I'm like, you know, I remember thinking it to them, like, you know, you're lucky if I know anything about hockey. I mean, I am completely admit that I am not a hockey. I know what's going on. I will always tell you what's going on with the Rangers and Islanders, but I'm not sitting down there breaking down what they're doing. So,
yeah, if memory, you know, if I recall correctly, it might have been Recchi. I don't know if it was Mark Recchi or. And it was a younger player, and I believe the trade went to Atlanta.
Okay. This was like Comrie days and stuff. This was like in those years, right? So.
But yeah, so basically, we had said you should probably go speak to your GM. Tom and I actually talk about that all the time on Twitter around trade deadline, and it's like one of those crazy memories. And I think also Chris Botta brought us all down for lunch downstairs into the media room too.
You know what? Actually, now that you mentioned it, I do remember going downstairs. And was Garth the GM then?
I believe he was the GM, and they re-signed Comrie that afternoon, so they brought us downstairs for that as well. Like he, I think he signed like a two-year extension.
I remember like a scrum with Comrie or with, I don't know if Comrie was there, but I remember a scrum with Garth and stuff. So, and I can't remember any other time when I would have been around the Islanders on trade deadline day. So that had them in that day. That's funny. That's 11 years ago. That is crazy.
It is crazy.
Well, you know,
it is crazy. And to think, you know, we were speaking about prior to starting to record coaches and Al Arbor and some of the crazy things that have happened in that time, you know, and, you know, essentially why we're going to be speaking, and that's the Lighthouse Project. And, you know, I went to all those meetings and open houses at Hofstra, and I know you covered it extensively. So, you know, why don't we talk a little bit about the Lighthouse Project and some of the reasons why it failed, and then in the comparables, some of the, you know, pushback for Belmont, and if any of the same type of concerns by the residents hold as much weight or any weight, you know, compared to that.
Yeah, no, it sounds great. There's a, I've really always enjoyed covering this saga, partly because, you know, my job is to, you know, obviously a job as a reporter is to find out information. And one thing I've never enjoyed covering with sports is that most of the time, the readers know what happened when they read your stories. So with the Lighthouse Project and anything with the Coliseum or the Islanders, or I always felt like there was an avenue there to really find information and get information out there. And there still is today. I mean, it's going to be that way until, you know, if and when Belmont ever, you know, comes, which, you know, obviously it's on that road right now. So anyway, so that's my history with it. Was I was always interested in just looking after a story and finding information where it wasn't readily available at your fingertips.
All right. So now moving forward, because things are a little more available, you know, and it has been 11 years basically since, you know, the Lighthouse Project, that I believe, I think I saw Katrina post something recently that, holy cow, I can't believe X amount of time has passed. So, you know, and I speak of Katrina Dole, who was the, you know, PR person, I guess, for the Lighthouse Project at the time. So, you know, now with the availability of the internet as much as we have and the things that are available on there, you know, it's funny that you think like this, but the Lighthouse Project, had it happened today, you know, with the anti-Belmont coalition people, who show up 10 at a time or whatever, but, what do you think the difference would be for the Lighthouse Project now? Do you think that it would benefit it? Would it be even worse for it? Or what's your take there?
Well, I mean, the thing too, you know, now that we have another development, and I'm, you know, take the Coliseum Hub, the current thing that's going on, that was in the news day today, take that out of the picture. Now that we have Belmont going on, you can kind of compare what the Lighthouse Project was designed to be and what Belmont is. And, you know, we don't know many details about Belmont in terms of the scale, in terms of financial scale. All we know is that Cuomo and people keep referring to it as a $1 billion investment. Obviously, $1 billion in any year is a lot. And when you think about a $1 billion, you know, arena plus retail development, you know, that's going to be a pretty big, you know, scope of an event, and the scope of a grandeur in terms of what they're going to build. But now think back, you know, 11, 12, 13 years, the Lighthouse Project was pitched as a $3.8 billion project. That's with new Coliseum. I don't even remember if they were going to renovate it or basically knock it down and build back up from the same footprint. But it was going to be essentially a new arena with all this around it. So $3.8 billion, that's almost four times what Belmont is right now. And obviously, the land at the Coliseum is much bigger than what Belmont is. But that's still, that's so when we talk about like how, you know, I hate to use Kate Murray because Kate Murray, although that she did play the bad guy or bad girl role, she was just the puppet for what was really going on
at that time. The arguments
between the politicians going on behind her. And she had the, she was the, you know, drew the short card and she had to play that role. But it really wasn't her making those decisions. And I think in, you know, people lose sight of that. Not that, you know, you should, anybody should forgive her or anything like that, but it's just, you know, she wasn't the real person, you know, saying, no, this is not, you know, X, Y, and Z. So I say all that because, you know, would the Lighthouse Project be done today? I think the same problems would exist. The same problems being that you have a very fractured political landscape in Nassau County. That's always fought, always. I mean, this has nothing to do with what our greater political landscape is, you know, with Trump and everything going on today and, you know, you're for him or against them and stuff like that. No, this Nassau County has always been a land filled with red tape, and it's very hard to get something done. And we've seen that because, you know, if you look at the Coliseum, they've been talking about building up that land, you know, for 50 years. So if they couldn't do it in 1970, 1980, 1990, 2000, 2008, why would they do it in 2018? So it's just hard to envision it happening. And then you throw on top of it a person like Charles Wong, who beats to his own drum. I mean, basically, in order to get something done at the Coliseum, you pretty much need to navigate these very, 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 you know, unnavigable waters, if that's even a word. And Charles Wong was probably not the one that didn't have the mindset to do it. So it's hard to ever see what the Lighthouse Project was getting done without, you know, everything falling perfectly in place.
You know, and that's, it's a crazy political landscape indeed, especially with some of the new politicians today seemingly, you know, forever hopeful that something is going to get done there, you know, and they did do renovations at the Coliseum. And, you know, I honestly haven't been there. I've only passed by and I've heard mixed things about the interior. But, you know, they never give up on this hope that, oh, the Islanders are going to move back full time. Belmont's not going to work out. And all these narratives where, you know, you scratch your head and it's still a political football to that end.
You know what? You know, obviously I hear the same things, but that being said, this current plan, now I have no more faith that this is going to get done than any other plan that's been brought forward. Obviously, it's going to look very, you know, they have a lot of things going for them. I laughed when I saw a quote from, I think it was Kevin Law, the Long Island Association, in today's paper, you know, basically saying that he thinks the stars have finally aligned for it to occur. And maybe that's true. But, you know, I've spoken to Kevin over the years about this, and I would, you know, jokingly tell him, I wonder if he was ever quoted in saying the same thing in any number of years, because I'm sure there was a period in time when you thought the Lighthouse Project was aligned and it was going to happen. I mean, one of the things Charles Wong always said, that the day he bought the, or not the day, when he bought the Islanders, Alphonse D'Amato, who was obviously a very powerful man in Nassau County, told him, we'll get you a new Coliseum. We'll get this done, you know, and basically he bought them with the promise that was going to happen and obviously never did, you know, through some fault of his own, because of what he wanted to do. But anyway, that's another story. Yeah, so I actually forget the with the Islanders coming back. The one thing I will say though is that I don't believe at its heart anything they're doing at the Coliseum is designed to lure the Islanders back or in case Belmont fails or anything like that. The bottom line is, you know, the Coliseum is being operated by, you know, the Barclays people, and you know, if that area is developed, it's better for them. And they were able to score in their lease with the county that anyone who develops the land has to work with them, which put them in the driver's seat. So they're coming in this as basically outsiders. They think they can get something done. They've teamed up with Reckler, who was one of the major players and obviously was part of the Lighthouse Group a decade ago. They think they can get it done. And from the Barclays people's standpoint, of course you want development there, because development there means it's nicer spot. People are more likely to come there. They're going to come there for reasons not for the Coliseum. And if it's a nicer spot, you know, more people come inside the Coliseum, and that's what they want at the end of the day. So, you know, that's what I really believe is at the heart of this, not any dream of bringing the Islanders back.
All right, I'm going to circle back on this in a little bit, because I do have something that I want to add, but I feel it's best now we move into Belmont and some of the issues maybe that you can draw comparisons to with, you know, issues with the residents and some of the opposition forces in play there.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, there's always going to be opposition. I mean, you know, and opposition is never a bad thing, I don't think. You know, I mean, you have to keep in mind, you know, what's the agenda for the people opposing it? You know, in this case, the people who are opposing Belmont are people who are living there and you know, worry about the quality of life of what's going to happen to their towns, to their homes, you know, and to traffic and stuff like that. All very legitimate concerns and all concerns that need to have answers before this goes forward. You know, I mean, so in terms of comparing the opposition to, say, the Lighthouse Project, you know, there was some of that. But it never really got to that point, because the opposition was, well, the Democrats are for it, so Republicans are against it, or the Republicans are for it, the Democrats are against it, or, you know, it's always one or the other. And then they work their, angles to really, push the envelope. With Belmont, it's different because it's state land and there's no zoning issues and there's no Nassau County politics. Obviously, you know, it's Cuomo's baby. Governor Cuomo has completely hugged this to no end. He believes this is his project. He has owned this. So it's in his best interest to get this done because it's on his record. From that standpoint, there could be a political, pushback from the other side, but they're not in any position to really stop it, nor are they going to, you know, it's in their best interest to put the time and effort to it. So the opposition here, you know, I would say to Islander fans is to take it seriously from the standpoint of, if you were in their shoes, what would you think? Now, what does that mean going forward? You know, it doesn't mean that, you know, there's no arena. It may mean that there's the developers or the state or the parties involved need to make this amenable to them, need to find a way to appease them. And doesn't mean, you know, giving them a park or something like that, but maybe it means paying for extra police service or paying for, you know, some kind of Long Island Railroad deal or doing something about traffic and, you know, whatever can be done. It's something to appease the people who are potentially going to be hurt by that. I mean, that's basically the core of what's going on with Belmont right now and with the opposition right now. You know, obviously, we're very early in the opposition. I mean, nothing's going to really come to it. You know, no lawsuit's going to come, from what I understand, until we're through this environmental review. No lawsuit can really come because it's in no one's interest. I mean, they need to see what comes from this environmental review. That's the big step that's taking place right now.
Another question to that end that I wanted to ask, because I feel you would know best. And I joked with you on Twitter that you are our arena expert at this point. You'd be like the star witness, so to speak. Unfortunately.
I'll take it. I really, I mean, it sounds, I'm the sports writer who does not cover sports. I mean, I enjoy covering these other aspects of it. And the Islanders have been a gift to that, because this has been going on for basically a career. You know?
Yeah. I, you know, you had said, geez, you know, and I think that's when you had posted a picture of your original Newsday ID as well, coincidentally. But no, yeah, I do see stuff about, you know, the environmental review and some of the questions involved with, you know, the agency, or not the agency, but the firm that was selected, you know, and I believe the opposition coalition, which sounds funny when you say it like that, wants to have a say in who is used and everything. But then I had seen some comments from you that it's the same group that did Yankee Stadium and Citi Field and stuff like that.
It is. I mean, part of that's because there's just not many environmental review companies out there. There's not. I think when the state put out the bid for this, only two companies responded, and it was them and obviously some other. And this group was picked, you know, according to ESD, the reason they picked them was because they did Yankee Stadium and Citi Field. I think they did Barclays as well. Yeah, I mean, that's, you know, the opposition group, you're referring to the Belmont Coalition. There are several of these, opposition groups, more or less. I mean, there's another Elmont group that's that came out of came out recently against the arena, and then, you know, Floral Park, the Village of Floral Park, something to watch because they're a neighbor and they have concerns, and they hired a law firm to write a letter in response to the environmental review scoping document, really questioning the scope of it. But, you know, the one you're referring to is the Belmont group, and they're the ones that have been doing the rallies, that have been out whenever there has been attention to, you know, try to draw eyeballs to their cause. And they have brought up this case about the they don't believe the environmental review is independent, truly independent, because it's being funded by the developer, which is true. The developer pays ESD, who then pays the environmental review company. The only thing I'd say to that is that's how it's always done on state deals. Doesn't mean it's right. Doesn't mean it's wrong. It's just how it's always been done. So, you know, obviously the developments have been occurring with this. And so, yeah, we'll see. I mean, it's real minutia detail that they're picking at in that one.
All right. So, I mean, it sounds like, though, you know, ownership and all the groups involved on the Islanders side are working with everyone, though, and they're, you know, open to making some concessions. I think I remember reading something about a sewage treatment plant or something that would be next to a school, and they would want it relocated to a different piece of the property and stuff like that. So aside from issues like traffic and, you know, obviously sewage, because that's a big one in Nassau County in general right now, it's a hot topic, you know, what other obstacles can you see potentially, you know, stalling, do you foresee any kind of stalling? Because it seems like it's been on track based on everything that, you know, Gary Bettman has said and Islanders ownership has said.
Yeah, and really the most important people in terms of the timeline are the ESD, the Empire State Development people, and they say that it's going to be. They say it's on time right now. The next big, we're going to see based on these next kind of couple hurdles, if it remains on time. And the two dates to watch are sometime in December, when they're going to release the first, it's called the draft environmental impact statement. This is basically, you know, it's a draft. It's like their first go at it. And they're going to say, you know, this is what we found. This is what the impact of the traffic impact is going to be. This is what we think the railroad impact is going to, you know, stuff like that. And then the public will have some period of time to respond. They're going to have some public hearings. This is all by law. And then after that, they have to come out with a final environmental impact statement. And that will come sometime in the spring. So if those two things occur in December and in the springtime, and those occur, and there's no pushback in terms of lawsuits or anything or appeals that will delay it, that's when construction can begin, and that's when you know everything's truly on time. I mean, developers often say it's really a race to get in the ground, and until someone actually puts a shovel in the ground, the game really hasn't started yet. So while this is it's definitely moving, and there's definitely progress, you know, wait to see in December when this review, this draft comes out, see what it says, see what it says about traffic, and we'll see then if it was truly independent. Do they address traffic to the degree that it's needed? Because we all can agree that traffic is bad on Long Island, period, but traffic is really bad on the Cross Island and the Hempstead Turnpike over there. And what's the impact of some kind of project like this going to be? And then the public hearings, and then the environmental impact statement in the spring. Those are the two hurdles for onlookers to follow.
All right. So to a follow up to that, you know, and I'm going to reference something that's happening in Suffolk County or happened in Suffolk County with the Canon headquarters moving to Melville. I know in the scope of the work and I don't know if it was on the county level of government or the state level of government that they, you know, widened the exits and entrances on the expressway. And, you know, I think the service road, they did some stuff with traffic lights and even the Northern State entrance and exits onto 110 onto 110. Right. So would you see the state getting involved to that extent if the traffic study says, well, you know, we can mitigate some traffic issues if we, you know, invest in the infrastructure on the parkway and on, you know, Hempstead Turnpike and stuff like that?
Yeah, I mean, that's an interesting one. I remember looking into that very early on in this, and I remember finding out that somehow the MTA, somebody's involved with it because it's even though it's a state parkway. Oh, no, it's maintained by the New York City Department of Transportation. So that it's basically a whole nother group. It's not a state agency, and that it's New York City. It's a city agency. So in terms of changing, the exit ramps or something like that, you know, obviously anything can be done. But it's, you know, we'll have to see how that plays out. I don't think that's as easily obtainable as you know, widening those, over at the LAE where you're referring to it as Canon. But that being said, there needs to be concessions. There needs to be ways, and concessions is the wrong word. There needs to be things done to make a large scale development like that work. And one of them is clearly the railroad. I mean, that's why from day one, you know, Cuomo has said, you know, MTA is going to expand service. We still, to this day, what has it been? Almost 9 months to the day. 9 months on Wednesday would be the 9 month anniversary of the news coming out. And we still don't know any more about the expanded service than just simply they're going to expand service. Doesn't mean that it's going to be more trains just on, game nights or concerts. Is it just going to be trains coming from the west? Are they going to deal with anything with the east? I mean, those are major questions because, you know, there's a lot of people coming there and that's not even dealing with the people going there for retail or anything like that. So that's the biggest question mark. I mean, obviously traffic and the Cross Island Parkway and the Hempstead Turnpike. And what does it mean for that traffic and with rush hour? Major questions. You bring up good ones with what's going to happen with exit ramps and stuff like that. But, you know, number one on the list is clearly the Long Island Railroad.
You know, and that's part of what my next question was going to be, was the railroad. So you beat me to the punch there. You think part of the reason why the MTA has really been silent on it is because they're so behind, really, the eight ball on their East Side Access and some of the other projects that they've taken on. Now, you know, I also don't know, were they involved with the Tappan Zee Bridge project as well? And, you know, because I know they have their own issues with the bridges, but is the MTA involved in that?
That's a good question. I don't think so because that was state. I can Google Tappan Zee real quickly, but although I did drive over it the other day. This is an aside. I was watching Norm MacDonald's new TV show on Netflix the other day, and I enjoyed. I felt like watching a podcast. So he was going off on tangents left and right. So I feel like I have the freedom to do it on a tangent here. So that's my long-winded way to say I'm going off on a tangent. Tappan Zee Bridge, I drove over it over the weekend, and on my Waze app, it came up as the Mario Cuomo Bridge. And I was impressed that Waze already is updated with that. But that brings us to the Waze, because one of the comments to ESD in response to the environmental review document from the spring was, how are you going to account for Waze apps? Because Waze is clearly going to, if you're sitting on the Cross Island Parkway, Waze is going to say, you know, there you can go through this side street and this side street and this side street to get to the game. You know, any kind of true review of the impact of traffic now needs to take into account of these people are not going to sit on the parkway, because why would you sit if you can at least make some progress? And if that's the case, what's going to happen to these small roads, especially if it's taken through residential roads? So that's one thing to watch too, when they come back with the results of the environmental review. So in terms of the MTA and why they have been slow to this, I mean, it's a great question. I don't have the true answer because only they know. I think there's some truth to the fact that they are a bit of a mess. I mean, I think we see that, pretty much every day. And this past year with the subway, this past summer, you know, we've seen it with the Long Island Railroad, with things that have gone on there. They also have major projects going on right now. So I do think that this was kind of, came up quick on them. When you think about it, the RFP came out in the summertime. The deadline was, September 30th, I think it was, of last year. And then in December, they announced the results and they said, oh, and there's going to be more expanded trains to Belmont. And Long Island Railroad's probably looking at it and saying, okay, we can expand the service there. We do it every Belmont day, but we can't go from the east right now. So there's questions there. I also think a reason why they don't have the answers is because there is no easy answer. They need to, in a perfect world, you rip it up and start over. And obviously that's hard to do with what's going on there. So they are in the middle of a study. It's supposed to be ending in a couple of weeks. I don't know if they're going to make it public, but we do know we're going to see the results of what their true plan is come December. And I think all eyes will be on that when that document comes out.
I think a positive to expand on your point is the work that they did over there in Pine Lawn, kind of close to the Newsday headquarters. You know, they went and they did a study to see the feasibility of adding a second track over there, because there was only one track for God knows how long, all the way to Ronkonkoma. And they didn't have to use eminent domain, and they managed to do it. I believe it's done now, or it's close to completion. I think they were supposed to finish towards the end of the summer. But I know they did a whole bunch of work on New Highway and over there by Pine Lawn Cemetery, and it went, I don't know exactly the length of how it went. It's supposed to go, I think, all the way to Ronkonkoma. But they said that is one of the projects that they were able to finish quicker because of some of the planning in advance. So hopefully, you know, they learn as they go along, and I know they're going to be doing that third track as well. So you have all these projects coming to a head, and hopefully, you know, they just learn from their experience, and if there is an option available to increase service at Belmont, you know, it comes in short time. So,
and there is an option, because clearly there is, you know, the trains go there right now. I mean, there's just two obstacles. One being that, you know, rush hour trains are at max as it is. So how do you get around that? And number two, it's money. I mean, at the end of the day, how much will it cost? And if it's going to cost a crazy amount, who's going to pay? And so I'm sure that will be part of the negotiations as well.
All right. Now we're going to just close off here, because I'm sure that we can just continue to talk forever about this, because there's so many different angles. But give me your, at the end of the day, what is the percentage that you feel Belmont will get done without any major obstacles to handle?
That's a tough one. Sitting here today on September 17th, there is no reason to believe it does not happen. I think because there's no reason to believe it's, because it's on target. I think the day it stops being on target, this day it falls behind schedule, that's the day when the doom and gloom scenarios come out. Because at that point, you know, it fell behind because of what? You know, I mean, we're talking about the Long Island Railroad. These are major, issues. But you could make the case that they can, push the project through despite that, or despite, and just expand service and not go full time. We don't know. We don't know the extent of what they can do to get around something like that, and their motives and stuff like that. These are all open questions. I think to project the percentages, it's just impossible to say, will a lawsuit be filed, or will an appeal to the environmental review be filed? And will it be taking, will it be serious enough for a court to step in, or will it just be rejected, on merit? These are questions that we just have no way of knowing because the environmental review, we just don't know what it says yet. That's a long way of saying, of punting on this question.
Sorry.
I think if you're an Islander fan and you're looking for me to give you hope, I think it's that every day that passes without bad news is hope, because it's every day that's on target. But really, until it becomes December and until it becomes March, there's really not much to say. December is really the big one, because that's when we really see the start of the end of the environmental review and how serious the issues are and how serious the opposition will be.
All right. So I'll have to have you back on then eventually to give me your take on this and what the percentages are at a later date. Now, I'm going to circle back to what I told you I was going to circle back to. I had heard through two different sources this week on the potential of the Islanders playing in Nassau Coliseum full time starting next season. Have you heard anything to this end?
That's always been a possibility. Brett Yormark has said it to a lot of people, including myself, that in his perfect world, they're playing every game there, starting tomorrow, So, he's you can't even say he's open to it. He wants it. The Islanders, I've yet to really completely comprehend their reasoning for not doing it. I guess they want it, part of the reason is you want to see how the Coliseum plays out. They did downsize it a little and they did nothing about the concourses. Once you're gone from the Coliseum, you say, oh, I missed the Coliseum. Well, but do you miss the long bathroom line? Do you miss the long concession line? So there's issues there. And I think, probably they want to see how that plays out. To answer your question, I think it's very realistic to think that occurs at some point in time. I have not heard anything more serious about that. To answer your question, I've heard nothing more serious about that today than, say, 3-4 months ago when this was really hammered out.
All right. Because even Johnny Boychuk, I believe, and this is coming from a fan. This isn't one of the sources that I'm referencing.
Sure.
He had said that even he believes next season that they will be there full time. So that was like a little more fuel to the fire. And the way that they added games extra onto the, three seasons that they're going to be playing there, seemingly out of nowhere, right around the time Tavares was going to be making his decision, was kind of questionable too. I felt like they were holding that in their pocket as like a little bit of extra ammunition to get him to sign. But, who knows? We'll take it day by day and see what happens, and hopefully it works out for them there.
I think the odds of them playing, I'll give you this one in terms of odds, the day a shovel goes in the ground, I would not be stunned. I don't think they agree. Now, who knows? This is all just us educatingly guessing. I don't think they agree to play full seasons at the Coliseum until shovels in the ground at Belmont, because they want to, keep it in their back pocket that they clearly do not want to be at the Coliseum any longer than they need to be. They like it as a stopover. But I think the last thing anybody over there wants is, well, why are they going to move to Belmont when they're playing at the Coliseum? Because they don't want to be there. So I think we'll see how it plays out. I think that's probably a line that someone said about Islanders arena stuff, every year for the last, and it's still continuing to play out.
All right. Well, like I said earlier, we'll have to have you on again. And if there's any developments, we'll definitely touch base at that point in the future. But I thank you for coming on. You've opened my eyes to a bunch of stuff that I hadn't really been following around all too closely, and hopefully you did the same thing for any Islander fans that are listening.
Thanks for having me.
All right, thanks, Jim. Take it easy.
Cool, thanks.
All right, that's going to wrap up Episode 7. Thanks again to Jim Baumbach for coming on the show and talking Belmont. Always a good time. It was great catching up. You could follow Jim on Twitter at Jim Baumbach, and of course on Newsday.com for everything arena or unrelated sports things, as he said. So keep an eye out for some of his stuff. That's always a good read. Now, Episode 8 is going to be right on the heels of this. Earlier last week as well, we spoke to Brett Kahn of Isles Meetup Philly the third group of the four that I plan on having on the show. It should be posted some point tonight or tomorrow, probably tomorrow. I'm going to definitely wrap things up right when we're done here. So thanks for listening. You can follow us on Twitter at Faithful Isles. You can follow me personally at Isles Blogger. We're also on Instagram, Faithful Isles, and of course on Facebook, The Isles Faithful.